When I think about Woodstock, there are really just a few pieces of music out of the three very long days that most readily come to mind. One is an over-the-top anti-war satire by Country Joe and the Fish. You know, the one, and it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. Which is pretty much the perfect in-your-face late 60s humor. And then there's this. Jimi Hendrix's performance of the national anthem. Even four decades later, that guitar solo still resonates. Intense, visceral, maybe maddening, maybe heartbreaking. Today in American Icon, Studio 360's David Krasnow tries to decode the message that Hendrix left us.
Michael William Doyle was too young to attend Woodstock, but he's been thinking about it ever since. He teaches courses on the 1960s at Ball State University in Indiana.
My brother was a DJ for an AM radio station in Winona, Minnesota in 69 and 70. And they signed off their station every night with the Star Spangled Banner. And one night I was in there with some friends, and I said to him, you know, it's time to close out. And I said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you play Hendrix's version of the Star Spangled Banner and just see what happens? So he was game for it. This is at midnight, a small town in Minnesota, 1970. And within minutes, the station manager, who was awakened from sleep, called my brother and told him that he was going to face firing over this, that his phone had been ringing off the hook with people who were calling to complain that he had played that version. Probably most of the people that were calling to complain had never heard that song before, doubtful that they'd ever heard of Jimi Hendrix. But they knew when they heard that song that there had been a rupture in something that was considered to them to be sacred.
It's already, like, oozing with chaos because the notes are bending and they're threatening to go somewhere else. He's letting them swell.
That's Tara Key. She's the guitarist who leads the band Antietam.
And it's, like, already, like, starting to dive bomb. He's holding the pressure points of the buttons. Everybody gets pushed when they're listening at the sports event and it actually means something to them.
To find the blues in it, to pull the blues out of it, and that's one of the things that Jimmy did.
Vernon Reid, he's best known for the band Living Color.
On a level, he brought the mortar fire to the mix.
I think he was just, like, really so key in making his guitar not sound like a guitar, making it be a conduit for a million other sounds. And I think he really, more than anybody, like, kind of brought that right in the front door.
And for people that heard it, for some people it was this awesome bit of truth telling, and for other people it was this confrontational critique. You know, Jimi Hendrix is almost like a representative of everything that the establishment was afraid of.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was kind of sexually dynamic African-American male playing very, very loud rock and roll guitar. He's the kind of person that I think the mainstream America of that time was afraid that their daughters were going to go home with. You know, Dad, I want you to meet someone. He plays guitar. Yikes.
This man was in the 101st Airborne, so when you write your nasty letters in...
Nasty letters? Wow, right.
When you mention the national anthem and talk about playing it in any unorthodox way, you immediately get a guaranteed percentage of hate mail from people who say, how dare...
That's not unorthodox.
Anyone?
That's not unorthodox.
It isn't unorthodox?
No. I thought it was beautiful. But then there you go.
And it was interesting to see him on the Dick Cavett show. Like, Dick Cavett was asking him about it. And Jimmy, I think, genuinely was like, what? I mean, his thing was, well, I'm an American.
I don't know. All I did was play it. I'm American, so I played it. I used to sing it in school. They made me sing it in school, so it's a flashback. Come on. I'm over about it.
Was, you think that was genuine? Because it's hard to tell looking at him there. Was he messing with Dick Cavett? Or?
I think he was messing. I think a lot in that interview, he messes with Dick Cavett. But I don't think when he refers to the Star Spangled Banner, his performance of it, when he says, well, I thought it was beautiful. I don't think he's being disingenuous. He was sincerely in the moment that he was in.
I think there was an assumption that young guy coming up, part of this generation, you know, we all think alike. Well, he didn't.
Reuben Jackson is a music scholar who's written a lot about Jimi Hendrix.
There are instances in which Hendrix said, well, he was in favor of the war because he made some reference in an interview to the domino theory, and that, well, if we don't stop the communists, you know, this will happen, and this will happen.
The domino theory was pretty much what LBJ thought, too. If we don't stop the communists here, where will we stop them? Unlike most of the flower children at Woodstock, Jimmy had already been in the armed forces. He was discharged honorably, although sleeping with his guitar was not considered really good soldiering. He actually played with one of his army buddies, Billy Cox, at Woodstock. Jimmy, at least, did not think his anthem was unpatriotic. Here's Michael Doyle, the historian.
He was asked about that shortly after the festival, and this is his cryptic response. Nowadays, we don't play it to take away all the greatness that America is supposed to have. We play it the way the air is in America today. The air is slightly static.
It's like the zeitgeist had vomited up this moment, this thing. But it was also the soundtrack of a country tearing itself apart in the real time. The sound of demonstrations and people's neck veins sticking out and people screaming at each other from across the ideological divide.
That phrase that they used, bring the war home, is exactly what you could say Hendrix was doing in the Star Spangled Banner performance.
So was Jimmy just reflecting the times, playing that static in the air? On the one hand, he wasn't known for making political statements. On the left, he was actually thought of as kind of a lightweight. A critic once called him a psychedelic Uncle Tom. But on the other hand, in the Star Spangled Banner, it really sounds like Jimi Hendrix has got something to get off his chest.
I remember after Hendrix died, there was an obit in Rolling Stone, and the writer referred to that the performance of the Star Spangled Banner, and he said when he got to the phrase, the land of the free, that sustained note was like a scream of black rage. And I thought, wow, you could certainly have interpreted it that way, but that rage was everywhere.
Again, Reuben Jackson.
Could you see it as a blues, you know, a lament, a question, a searing series of questions? I would say yes. I'm not talking in terms of scales, necessarily pentatonic scales or flatted thirds, etc. But I would say it was a blues in the broadest, you know, emotional, poetic, thematic sense. The blues as conduit for whatever is happening, you know, whether it's, you know, on a more personal level, your baby left you, or your blues for or about a country which is going through some, you know, issues, as they say in therapy.
America in the 60s definitely had issues. But Michael Doyle takes it much farther back, all the way to the beginning of American history. He compares Jimmy's anthem to a sermon, a kind of diatribe that Puritan ministers used to deliver, something called a Jeremiad.
The Jeremiad sermon, based on the prophet Jeremiah, calls people to task for their failings.
And this was never really something you wanted to hear.
And there's always this vague threat that if they fail to restore the fervor, the commitment to these larger principles they believe is God-given, that catastrophe awaits them. And I feel that you could say that Hendrix's playing of the Star-Spangled Banner is the oral equivalent of a Jeremiad for 1969 in America.
You know, when you get to, in the rocket's red glare, I mean, he's like setting the rockets off. When Francis Scott Key came up with the words, I mean, he was in a stockade, and there was like a mortar attack. He literally saw this battle. And that's the thing about the Star-Spangled Banner, is that we divorce it from the actual event that it describes.
And that's the thing. When we sing the national anthem, we tend to forget it's not about baseball or parades or spacious skies or amber waves of grain either. The song is about war, a forgotten war, but still, this country was born in war, and we've been fighting wars ever since, and Jimi Hendrix's Star-Spangled Banner doesn't let you forget that.
I think you can be, quote, patriotic and acknowledge the degree of violence that, well, this country was founded, in my opinion, of violence with, you know, the Native Americans, et cetera, and I think it's saying, well, this is our song. And America's like a house with many rooms, and some of the rooms have some blood on the walls.
These days, most Americans have come to accept or acknowledge the blood on our walls. We don't have the kind of massive protests that marked the 1960s. I asked Tara Key, the guitarist from Antietam, to take Jimmy's Star-Spangled Banner and make her own version of it for the times that we're living in right now. You can hear in her version that America holds a very different place in the world. Not so much the colossal superpower, more vulnerable, and struggling to meet the challenges in front of us.
I mean, everybody wants to make it work, but it's just like the way is hard to find a unity about now. So I just think in this time you go inside and you find the way to give your best from internally. You have to start from within now to find a way to be a good citizen and to help make it work.
Instead of a scream of rage against America, what Tara played sounds a little like an elegy. Melancholy, but loving. And I think a little bit hopeful. For Studio 360, I'm David Krasnow.
See a video of Tara Key's performance of the Star-Spangled Banner and hear a performance by Vernon Reed at studio360.org/American Icons. And while you're there, you can listen to any of the episodes from the series, including I Love Lucy, the autobiography of Malcolm X, and Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show. Speaking of Buffalo Bill, I wanted to make a couple of small corrections to that show. My late parents would have been very unhappy about my slip. I said Calvary instead of cavalry. I know. The former is a biblical icon. The latter charges on horseback with a bugle. Also, Sitting Bull was killed at the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota, not at the Pine Ridge Reservation. Thanks to our listeners for all the great feedback you gave on our American Icon series.